HanselMinutes.com. It's Hansel Minutes, a weekly discussion with web developer and technologist Scott Hanselman, hosted by Carl Franklin. This is Lawrence Ryan, announcing show number 69, recorded live Thursday, June 21st, 2007. Support for Hansel Minutes is provided by Telerik RAD Controls, the most comprehensive suite of components for Windows Forms and ASP.NET web applications. Online at www.telerik.com. And by .NET Developers Journal, the world's leading .NET developer magazine. Online at www.sys-con.com. In this episode, Scott and Carl discuss current hardware and building a new developer machine.
Hi, this is Carl Franklin. You're listening to Hansel Minutes from HanselMinutes.com. I'm here with Scott Hanselman again. Hi, Mr. Scott.
How are you, sir?
I'm fine. What's up this fine day?
Well, I finally got permission from the wife to build my computer.
The dream machine, as it were?
This is the ultimate developer rig, the new computer for the home.
Awesome.
I was going to buy a MacBook. I've been talking about this on and off, but you know, and I even went and put it in my shopping cart on Apple.com, and I let it sit there for a bit. I went to the Apple store at the mall and put it all together and thought about it, but I just couldn't justify $4,000 at this point when I figured I don't really use the Mac Mini that I have right now, so I'm just going to hang back a little bit on the Mac. But I do use my home PC a lot. It's a P4, and it's just not cutting it for me right now, and I've had a lot of bad experiences with Vista. And I just felt that I needed to get this machine fresh. This is one of those computers that I think we all have had at one point or another where we build it ourselves, we went down to Fry's, and then we continue to kind of make it a Franken computer, adding a part here and there and, you know, a couple hundred bucks at a time, trying to keep it alive. But it's just not happening for me. So I wanted to put together my own machine, but I realized that since, I haven't been really good at building hardware since the, you know, Pentium 3, Pentium 4 days, and all this new Core 2 Duo stuff was a little out of my expertise. So I called Jeff Atwood from Coding Horror.
That's what happens when you have an IT department at your disposal.
It's funny how that works. But yeah. I really wanted to make a great machine, and then I realized that as I looked around on the net, there's so many people building ultimate gamer rigs. I'm just not interested in an ultimate gamer rig. I wanted an ultimate developer rig. Just like if you built a machine, you'd want it to be a really good video and audio editing rig.
Yeah, well, it's funny. I thought about this when you told me about today's topic, and you know, a developer rig doesn't really need to be the Mondo Gigando powerful thing in terms of processor speed. More RAM is good, of course, but I don't think it has to be up there with, you know, ones that are machines that are going to do video processing per se or real-time rendering or anything like that. Just because, you know, a compiler is pretty darn fast even on a slow machine by today's standards.
Well, and one of the other things that I wanted to be able to deal with from a developer perspective is things like parallel builds. Like an Orcus MS build allows you to tell it how many processors you want it to, how many processes you want it to spin up to do parallel builds. So, you know, that's the kind of thing where putting together a quad core system might be a real benefit.
Now that you mention it, Scott, I think that maybe the power would be good if you're going to be running virtual PCs or VMware sessions, which many developers do, or even virtual server to do testing against server configurations. So in that sense, yes, you probably do want more power.
Yeah, I wanted to find a balance between the money power, you know, price performance ratio. You know, I said, well, maybe I'll just go nuts. I'll spend $4,000, $5,000, make it a business expense, and buy the ultimate computer. But it seemed to me, and I talked with Jeff Atwood, my friend from CodingHorror.com, that there is really a sweet spot around anywhere between $1,600 and $2,000 where you can put together quite a machine.
Yeah.
And if you go and spend double that or triple that, you really don't get twice the machine or three times the machine. You get some amazing stuff, but you know, the difference between a $200 processor and a $500 processor and a $900 processor, it's really all just kind of artificial. It's prices are always dropping. Anything you buy now, of course, is going to be obsolete in a few years.
Yeah.
But we wanted to find that balance.
So I've always found the sweet spot pretty easy to identify by going to Newegg.com and looking in each category, you know, processors and whatever,
exactly.
And then sort by most popular.
Yep, and they're really smart over there.
Yeah, it's not just the best rated, because sometimes the best rated will also be the most expensive, but the most popular tells you where the sweet spot is for any given component.
And Newegg is where I ended up buying the stuff. The list of products I purchased was at shrinkster.com/Q50. And there's a lot of really interesting discussion going up on the blog right now because a lot of folks have found places where I could have potentially squeezed a couple hundred dollars here and there, saved some money. Everyone's got opinions about motherboard brands, of course, you know, and everyone's got opinions about hard drives.
And, of course, the longer that post stays there, the more comments you're going to get because of the prices will be changing.
Right. But here's basically what we tried to put together, thinking again about the developer. So I've got a steel ATX mid-tower case from Antec.
Nice.
I could have gone bigger and heavier. There's a guy who does custom cases, and there's also cases that you can get where the entire case is a giant heatsink, big aluminum
Zalman
thing. Exactly.
Yeah.
But this particular one was a balance. It's a little spendy for a case. It's $150, but it's a gunmetal black, real dark case. It fit in with the way I like things. And it's a mid-tower, so it's big enough that we'll be able to put some sound damping.
By the way, I use these cases myself, and I love them.
You do?
Yeah.
So this is the Antec P182 that we got.
Yeah.
I don't know a lot about motherboards anymore. I was an Asus guy for a while. I'd used ABIT. And while I've gotten a lot of negative flack for the choice we made, which was an MSI motherboard, Jeff, in his experience, has found that it's actually a pretty decent motherboard. It's got the NVIDIA Anforce chipset on it. It's an LGA 775 Intel motherboard. It's a pretty decent motherboard. It's got all the things you would expect as far as lots of USB ports. It's got gigabit LAN built into it. It's got really nice cooling. The chipset is set up with aluminum pipes and some really nice Northbridge passive cooling. Jeff really likes to focus on how is this thing going to be as quiet as possible and as powerful as possible. My current system is a real loud system. It is really obnoxious. It sounds like a jet plane.
I don't really see anything wrong with this. I would want to make sure that the chipsets for the NVIDIA Northbridge and Southbridge exist for Vista before I bought that. But you can see that the total, there's 195 reviews and 77% of them are positive, so I would say that's pretty good. That's telling.
It's interesting how in the kinds of purchasing decisions that folks make, whether it be here or on Amazon, that you can really count on the reviews. There's a balance that gets found when you get a lot of reviews, you know, more than a few dozen.
Yeah.
You can get a real good sense about the real-world experiences that folks have.
Yeah, and the thing to do isn't to read the positive reviews. Read the negative ones. See what the negative reviewers say about them. Sometimes they're just mad because, you know, they took them 3 weeks to get it out the door or something like that. But sometimes people have legitimate problems.
Yeah, and one of the things that's also worth watching out for is whether or not you get a sense that this particular motherboard manufacturer is focused on having the BIOS updated a lot, getting the firmware updated.
Hmm.
You know, they may have problems initially, but if they can deal with them or offer you other benefits through a constantly or often updated firmware, particularly for the overclocker, this is a real valuable thing to watch out for.
Cool.
So I'm not unhappy with this motherboard, but this is certainly something I could swap out at some point. I do like also that this one has an external SATA or SATA connector. So I've got options for my external hard drives. You know, I've got a lot of external hard drives in the stuff that I do. I run a lot of VMs on external hard drives.
Right.
Well, this has a FireWire port and all the requisite USB ports. Having an external SATA connector is a nice benefit, I think, as more and more drives switch over to SATA, which as a bandwidth gets you something like three gigabits a second.
Now, are you actually running this machine now, or are you just
I'm not.
Ready to order it?
So what we did is we ordered it, and I've shipped it down to Jeff in California, and I'm going down to San Francisco on Friday, and I'm going to meet up with him at his office, and we'll build it.
So we'll have to have a follow-up show, of course, and you can tell us what
you'd
hopefully like
we'll get
like.
Jeff on the show with us, and he can explain, because this is not just a matter of putting it together. Certainly, folks that listen to this podcast are the kinds of folks who could put together a machine.
Right.
It's not just the pouring it into a container, but the follow-up show we'll talk about what are the kinds of things we can do to make it silent.
Cool.
There's a lot of people out there that are focused on making silent PCs. There's a great website at shrinkster.com/Q52. It's Silent PC Review. SilentPCReview.com. It has a lot of focus on what can you do to find that balance between performance and being silent. For example, I'm going with a Western Digital Raptor drive for my main system drive.
Very nice.
This is a 10,000 RPM drive. And it spins real loud. But there's techniques you can do to dampen that kind of sound that a drive like that makes. For example, suspending it inside of a container that has basically suspending it in air via rubber bands.
Yeah.
There's sound damping and vibration damping kind of equipment that you can plug into it.
You could do
Those
what I do is
things.
You could just put it in a closet.
Yeah, you know, it's funny. I used to do that once. I took a box and I just shoved it in the closet. The problem was it made the closet really hot, and that particular box would overheat a lot.
Right.
Because I did a poor job of doing the cooling.
Right.
Now, a lot of people have been going back and forth on whether a developer machine really needs RAID, RAID specifically for mirroring. And I go back and forth on this myself, but I already have a Western Digital 150 on my current machine. That was the very last piece of hardware that I bought to make that machine faster.
Right.
I'm thinking I'm going to take that drive once I've brought everything over to the new system, and I'm going to end up mirroring my system drive. Because there's kind of two things to worry about. There's the getting the box back from the dead. Do you mirror it? Do you do RAID on your system drive so you can bring it back? Or the other option, of course, other than just doing RAID mirroring for your system drive, is to take images a lot, whether you use something like Acronis True Image or whether you use Windows Home Server. What is going to happen as a developer when your machine dies, whether your C drive blows up or whether your data drive blows up? So there's kind of two different things to deal with there. I do both. I like RAID, but I also take images all the time.
Speaking of RAID and drives, you should head on over to shrinkster.com/04x and check out the STEC Zeus Solid State Drive, which is no moving parts. It's a flash drive that's up to 256 gigs.
That'd be pretty expensive.
Pretty expensive. I think I remember Richard Campbell telling me that they are hoping to get the price down to $2 a gigabyte by 2010 or something like that.
And you know that'll happen by 2009 or 2000, you know, end of next year.
Right. But it's over 200 times faster than a 15,000 RPM enterprise hard disk drive. But, you know, that's what happens when you don't have any magnetic media.
It's interesting that they're making hard drives faster and faster. They're upping the MTBF, the mean time before failure.
Yeah.
Some drives have double the MTBF of another drive. A number of people in the comments said that I should get a little bit higher RPM drive rather than the Raptor. Get the MaxStor Atlas, which is now at 15,000 RPM.
I didn't know
also
that.
Also a
they
Seagate
had one.
Cheetah, which will do 15,000 RPM. So for really heavy I/O, these particular drives are pretty hardcore. They can do basically 300-400 megabytes a second theoretically. They
wow.
also include a lot of cache, 16 meg cache on the drive itself, with only a 3.1 millisecond seek time.
Wow!
But here's where the balance happens, right? A drive like that's going to cost you $500-$600.
Right.
Like for example, if you were going to go and get an Atlas, it might cost you $500. You want to do RAID, then you're looking at more than the cost of the entire system being spent just on that. So would you really get 50% more speed? You know, I don't know. But from a price performance balance, the Western Digital Raptor 10,000 RPM drive is about $200, and you can find them around for $175 if you hunt. Versus a $500 or $600 drive with the 15,000 RPM.
Also, the faster they go, usually the lower capacity they go up to.
Yeah, the 15,000s right now at 150, and the Western Digital for a long time was a 75 gig drive. Now with the perpendicular configuration right. that they're using, they're able to get more on that. But you know, I don't know if I want my bits that close to each other, frankly.
Well, my machine actually has two Raptor 15,000 RPM 150 drives mirrored that, as a boot drive.
15,000 RPM?
I'm sorry, 10,000 RPM.
Okay.
Yes. Mirrored with mm-hmm. onboard RAID. So that is my boot drive.
And that works well?
It works great. It's
and you're
fast.
Using the built-in RAID on the hard on the motherboard?
Yes, I am, because I also have a PCI Express RAID controller, but that's for the data. Yeah.
Ah, interesting. Now, for me, on this particular instance, I'm just going to have a data drive that'll be a kind of a standard Seagate Barracuda. It's only $100. It'll be a 500 gig drive, and that'll just be, you know, D for data.
Right.
I've got a lot of external drives, and, you know, I used to hoard, you know, video. I would have my media center recording video, and I'd use my computer as a DVR.
Right.
I'm doing that less and less. And I'm realizing that with things like Blockbuster.com and Netflix, the movies that I want to watch can be gotten quickly.
Yeah.
There's no reason for me to hoard all this stuff. So while I used to have, you know, a terabyte and a half of this kind of stuff, all my DVDs ripped onto the machine, it seems, for me at least personally, the psychic weight of having to worry about whether that data is backed up or safe didn't become worth the benefit. So I'm finding less and less that I need that kind of storage, and now I'm just focusing on having images of all the machines in my house backed up. That's right. It's more important to me to be able to get my wife's laptop back from the dead than it is for me to, you know, hoard a video of DVDs that I already have.
Right. So let's talk about the processor that you chose here.
Now, this was an interesting one because this is where I was not very educated about this, but I wanted to find a processor that wasn't going to be kind of like the whatever Intel's selling for $1,000 processor.
Right.
But I didn't want to just get a standard Core 2 Duo. I wanted something a little bit more. And Jeff suggested the Core 2 Quad Q6600.
Meaning it has four dies?
Yeah, it's a quad core.
Holy crap.
Processor. Now, when I bought it, it was 531. It's already down to 498. And one of the tipsters in my blog post here said that the price of that quad Q6600 is going down to $266 on July 22nd.
Oh, my goodness.
So I jumped the gun, and it cost me $250. But the general impression is that this is the processor to have. They're cutting it in half again on July 22nd. And you'll be able to – now, if you wanted to, then you would get the Core 2 Extreme. So that would be the E6700.
I never understood the difference between the regular Intel chips and the Extreme chips. Do you know the difference?
I don't. Hopefully Price, someone will send us a note. We'll get a flood of mail explaining what the difference is. I really don't like the way that they do these. I don't know anymore. It doesn't make any sense.
Yeah.
I mean, maybe I'm an old school, but once I figured out 46SX versus 46DX, I figured that all was right with the world.
Right.
But now it's like the Core 2 Quad Q6600 versus the Core 2 Quad E6700. It's very confusing. Now, some people argue that the four cores aren't really necessary. But, you know, if you've ever seen me on a machine, and I know you have, I tend to have a lot of things going simultaneously. I switch around a lot.
Sure.
I'm very likely to fire a process off in the background and then go and do something else. I also sometimes do some kind of personal processor farming where I'll actually pin a process down to a processor.
Yep.
And then again, with Orcus having this notion of a parallel build, you can get 25, 30% more performance by running off multiple instances of MS Build for real large builds. So for me, that was definitely a valuable thing. Well, I did spend too much money because I didn't wait till July to buy it. The word on the street is that that's the processor to have. And according to Jeff, that along with the MSI motherboard makes for a very overclocking friendly system.
Okay.
So we might be able to get that 2.4 gigahertz to go up to 3.1, which could squeeze extreme level speeds out of a non-extreme processor.
I'm not so sure that you're gonna see a big difference running a developer machine with that change in
between CPU. What and what
2.4 and 3. Point whatever. I'm not so sure you'll see a difference, but it is interesting. I think maybe if you were a gamer, you'd be more interested in that. Hey, tell me about the enormous heatsink cooler thing that you got here. What is that all about?
Yeah, this is the Scythe. What is it called? A Ninja, basically. It's a giant CPU cooler. I've got a giant one on my system right now.
Looks like something that you'd see at the Indianapolis 500.
Yeah, it's absolutely huge, and we had to do some measurements to make sure that it would have room inside of the system.
Right.
It's got copper parts. It is real big. It's a little bit less quality than the Zalman heat sinks, which are very well thought of.
Right.
But it apparently cools very, very well. It's huge, but it doesn't really matter that it's huge because once it's mounted in there, if it's mounted correctly, it doesn't put too much lateral pressure on the processor. One of the problems with some of these giant CPU coolers is that they don't really clip well to the motherboard. They can torque the motherboard and also put a lot of lateral pressure on the chip itself.
You got to be very careful when putting them in. You know, one thing that I like about this, and I'm just looking at the picture here, is that it's got pipes going up either side into these radiator-type heat sinks.
Right, these are the copper pipes.
And they sandwich a fan. So there's a fan in the middle, and then the heat sinks are on either side of that. So those things are getting hot, and then, of course, the fan is cooling them off directly. Yeah.
And this was a balance. I didn't
pretty
really
cool.
feel like spending $150 for a cooler. So for $35, it's a pretty decent one. Hmm. And it apparently works very well. If you're overclocking like a 6600 and you overclock it to 3 gigahertz, you can get idle temperatures of about 30 Celsius, which is pretty reasonable and definitely cooler than my current system runs. Now, again, it's huge, but it cools the things down and it stays quiet. And that's really the whole point is to kind of keep that case temperature, keep that CPU temperature around 30 Celsius.
Now, you went with a 520-watt power supply. What was your thinking there?
Well, this Corsair power supply is also very well thought of, and I know that Jeff has a lot of experience with this particular one. I have a tendency to put a lot of drives in my cases. Even though I'm an external hard drive guy, you might be, if I decide to do RAID, I might have 4 different drives in there, along with 2 pretty large video cards. I don't want to have any chance that I'm not going to have enough wattage. Most often, you don't need this kind of wattage. You can get away with 300 watts.
But having more is the safe thing. It's a
safety, this case, having more is pretty safe. It's got a very, very quiet fan that varies its RPM based on temperature. It's got a real nice modular cable that lets you basically choose the cables that you want. They're very kind of focused on just getting the job done. You use just the cables you want, no more, no less, as opposed to having a big giant fan of cables that pops out of it. That allows you to have much better airflow in your case. Just use the cables you need.
One thing you should be careful of when you're buying a power supply, if you're going to get one that's big, and I mean, my power supply, I don't mind telling you, is a megawatt. It's 1,000 watts. And I had a problem with it because it was so long that it was like solving one of those puzzles that Desaware always has at their booth at you know the shows. They have those little logic puzzles. They're like things that are interlocked, and only by twisting them together in the right way and moving your hands a certain way can you take them apart. That's what the experience was like getting this in the case.
Really?
It barely fit.
Is it pretty loud?
No, it's not loud at all, but it was just big. And even though it was a big case, you know, the openings that were available for me to put things in, it just was a little too big for it. So,
yeah.
But I did get it in, obviously.
This is a pretty comfortable size, and with the 520 watts, it's going to give me enough power to do whatever kind of overclocking that I need.
Yeah.
And it's also very well thought of as a very quiet power supply. And even though it's, you know, twice as much as your average off-the-street power supply, I don't think that a power supply is a place you want to really
I agree.
Skimp.
No, yeah, you don't want to take a chance. You know, you've mentioned overclocking now 3 or 4 times, and I'm curious as to why you think you're going to be needing to overclock.
I don't think I'm needing to overclock, but I don't want to spend $1,000 on a processor to get the kind of performance that I need. And I feel like conservative overclocking and still getting a great deal of stability is just free speed. You know, even if you're only getting 15-20% more speed out of it, if you can get the thing rock solid, if you can run something like a Prime 95 or one of those benchmarks and run the thing really, really hot for, you know, 2-3 days and have it not blue screen on you, have no trouble at all, have no stability issues, then, you know, why wouldn't you want to?
Well, I don't know. I just, I don't know, something about that just strikes me as a little bit odd that, you know, for a developer machine, do you really need to take the risk? And that's what you're really doing. The manufacturer has set the speed saying this is a safe speed for this processor. You know, when you overclock, you're just sort of tempting fate, I think. So I don't know.
I understand your point of view. From my point of view, it was about the fastest developer rig that I could get for this price performance ratio. And for me, a very conservative overclock gave me the performance I wanted without increasing the price.
Right. I would just recommend you try it without overclocking first and, you know,
acceptable. I'll do benchmarks both ways. And then of course when doing overclocking, you want to make sure not only is the processor well known for overclocking well, is the motherboard friendly to the overclocker? Does the power supply provide the right amount of voltage to be able to do that?
Right.
And do you have memory that will appreciate that kind of overclocking? Some memory is not overclocking friendly. Also, some memory requires a little bit more voltage than the average motherboard wants to give it. So we have to think about those kind of things when making these decisions.
Yep.
And then we just ended it up with some Kingston RAM. I'm going to get 4 gigs just in case I want to run 64-bit. Just going to get 4 1-gig sticks, very inexpensive, only $200.
Well, that's interesting. It looks like good RAM, and, you know, the reviews are pretty good, so.
Yeah, you know, everyone's got opinions about these kind of things. You don't want to skimp, but at the same time, you don't want to spend double if you don't have to. So, you know, fortunately, with a building a system out of components like this, worst-case scenario just means that I'll have to find another component. Of course, the option would have been to go with a Dell otherwise. But I like the benefit that this kind of modular design gives me. If this RAM doesn't work out, I'll get something else.
Right.
You live and you learn.
All right, Scott, let's save the best for last, your video card. I see it's a PCI Express 16, which right there tells you this is a serious video card. Anybody who's doing getting a new video card these days should be looking at PCI Express 16.
Yeah.
Yeah.
This is a pretty decent balance. This is a GeForce 8600. It's a 256 meg card. It's not, you know, a super duper $500 video card, but it is a pretty serious video card. It's based, like I say, on NVIDIA's 8600 GTS core. Mm-hmm. It's a dual width PCI Express card, so it's a big card. It's got two DVI outputs, so one video card will run two monitors happily.
And both of those are dual link, right?
Right. The DVIs are dual link. Yes.
Yes.
Sorry, I always think that I was thinking you were referring to SLI because we're getting two of these cards. They're about 150 each.
Right.
And a lot of folks assumed when we put two cards in the spec that we were talking about running the SLI.
Right.
That would give you some pretty serious performance for a pretty decent price. But for us, it was about running four monitors.
Right,
not about linking them.
Or you could actually run two 30-inch monitors, like the Dell or Apple 30-inch monitors, which are right now, I think, some of the biggest monitors you can get.
Yeah.
Pretty cool if you want to do that. So how many monitors do you plan to run with this thing?
Well, right now at home I've got two, but I'm considering getting two more 22-inch flat screens and putting them on the on the right and left-hand side, respectively, and kind of bracketing my current dual monitor system.
It's interesting. You know, I have a single Dell 30-inch display, and I don't miss having two monitors. You know, having that little bump in the middle and having to physically move my head a lot. But you know, with 2560 by 1600 resolution, you can pretty much get a lot of stuff in there. But you know, I can't say that I wouldn't like to have another one.
You know, it really is a kind of a religious argument. A lot of people think, why not have just a giant 30-inch? When I was visiting some guys up in Seattle, they had one giant 30-inch widescreen Dell, and they had two 22s turned on their side so that their width was the same height as the 30-inch.
Yeah.
And they would have them left and right. So they had a total of three monitors.
That's what Richard Campbell has. That's his setup.
It just seems like a really nice balance.
Yep.
Other thing I like about this particular card, this is from MSI, is it's already overclocked.
Hmm.
They've got a big cooler attached to the thing.
Yeah.
And there's ways to make the fan silent because a video card fan has a tendency to make these things really, really loud.
Hmm.
What you can do is you can there's tips actually in the reviews of this particular card up on Newegg where you can kind of fool around with the way that the fan plugs into the card and you can get the fan running slower.
Hmm.
So it'll run silently or darn near silent.
Yeah.
So it not only overclocks nicely, but it's got a pretty decent cooler of its own that they've added on to the reference design. So it seemed like a good balance. You know, I'm not someone who's going to spend the amount of money I spent on my Xbox on a single video card. But yeah. When I play the occasional game, I'd like it to work. But additionally, if I'm going to have all the eye candy of Vista, I don't want to have to think about.
I agree.
Gosh, why isn't Arrow fast enough? If I minimize a window, well, you know, damn it, I want that window to go boom.
Right.
And
just want
minimize
it to work. Yeah.
Right now, my ATI Radeon is just really struggling with Arrow, and I pretty much had it with ATI at this point.
Well, Scott, it's been a great show. I mean, we don't usually talk about hardware like this, but I find it cool to just take a look and see what the state of the art is. So, thanks for that, and we'll have to catch up later after you get it and have been running it for a few weeks and let us know how it works.
Yeah, I would really encourage listeners to send in their opinions because, you know, I don't claim in any way to be an expert on this kind of stuff. I'm just a guy who reads a lot.
Mm-hmm.
I trust Jeff. We've gone back and forth in the assembling of this machine. He cares about the overclocking and getting it right with a level of passion and detail that I don't necessarily share.
Hmm.
I wanted to find a machine that wasn't just a stock Dell, that had some future-proofing to it, that was a good balance. I think I put together a pretty decent machine.
Yeah,
I know that a lot of our listeners are putting together their own machines, so I'm really interested in what they've come up with to squeeze that last little bit of speed out of a developer machine.
Awesome. And with that, we'll see you next week on Hansel Minutes.